is a writer for The Athletic. He's a contributor to MLB Network. He has his own TV interview show called Baseball Stories with Jason Stark. Yes, he is Mr. Jason Stark. Jason, how are you?
Hey, Mike. Happy 5th of July. I'm good. How are you, man?
You too. I got to say, your show is... you know, you're so much better than Fran Healy. It's not even funny.
It's the nicest thing you ever said.
There you go. All right, so let's talk some baseball here with Jason Stark. And let's talk about these Phillies. They are 10 games over 500. Startling statistic, which I didn't really realize. They're, for the first time since 2011, 10 games over. And, you know, that usually means success as you finish the rest of the season. So what do you think about that number?
All right, well, you know, I actually was surprised by what 10 over actually means this time of year. And let me fill you in, because this shocked me. Mike, do you know that the last 18 teams to get to 47 and 37 or better after 84 games all made the playoffs?
Uh-huh. I thought that's where you were going to go with this.
Yeah, over the last 4 years, it's 23 out of 24. And, you know, it doesn't guarantee anything, but when you look at how they played, look at who they played against, and look at what's happening in the division, I think the math plus the rest of this makes it seem a lot more feasible than we thought it was maybe even a few weeks ago.
Well, that is very encouraging. I hope the fans start to realize that. But I don't know. So we're talking about now the Phillies and their mindset have to kind of change their mindset because, I don't know if they anticipated being like whether they're going to be a buyer or a seller or whether they're just close to the playoffs. But the Nationals, who were the favorites to win the division, are look like crap. And they look like a team that is on a decline. So how does that change how the Phillies look at the rest of this season and how they can stand out?
Well, I mean, you just have to do the math. The Nationals, all of a sudden, they're 6-18 the last 4 weeks with the worst ERA in the league. The only win by a starting pitcher in that whole time was in that 17-7 game right here in Philadelphia. And they just don't have the look of the team that people in baseball expected to run away with this division. I think we know the Braves are for real. The Phillies are proving they're for real. And so all of a sudden, the Phillies have a realistic chance not just to sneak in, but to win the division. And that translates, I think, to a much more aggressive approach heading into the deadline. Now, if you're just playing for the wild card, if you're just trying to sneak in and play that one game, you know, there's a limit to how much any rational team should be willing to do. It's a coin flip to survive that game. But if you have a chance to win, if you have a chance to finish first, and they would have a chance to have home field advantage, that is a completely different set of circumstances. And the vibe I get is this front office, if this continues now for another couple of weeks, is prepared to be a lot more aggressive at the deadline than maybe it had originally intended.
All right, let's determine what that aggressive word means in the context of like Manny Machado, Cole Hamels, other guys that you may think that they're targeting.
All right, since Manny Machado was just here, let's just talk about him. There's so much clamor for this to happen, and I think it's so unlikely that it actually does. You know, the Phillies have this incredible depth of prospects, right? Second-tier prospects, guys who are going to play in the big leagues, are not really going to be difference makers, who they can afford to trade. They also have the ability to take on anybody's contract, anybody's money that they would like to dump. And that puts them in a great position, but not to get Manny. You know, this is the Orioles' one opportunity to change the course of their franchise. And, you know, they're looking for a Gleyber Torres kind of guy, the Aroldis Chapman deal from a couple years ago. That's not going to happen, I think, but it's certainly not going to happen with the Phillies. So I think the stance is stay in touch. make sure that the Orioles know that there's real interest. You also have the ability to maybe add a bullpen piece because they're willing to trade their whole bullpen. Adam Jones might even be able to fit here. I don't know. So there's a lot of different ways that could come together. But right now, they would seem to me to be really unlikely to trade for him, but incredibly likely to sign him next winter.
Hmm. See, there are two conflicting thoughts here. If they have a chance to win the division, and certainly he would cinch it, I think, and home field advantage, then why wouldn't you do it? Why wouldn't you come up with a package, even if you have to give up prospects?
Okay, I don't know that he would cinch it. I don't know that any player ever does that. You know, if you go back and look at deadline deals, the big deal for a rental player, yeah, it feels good. But it doesn't guarantee it.
But the one thing they lack is consistent pop. He gives them that every night he's in the lineup.
You're correct. Look, we can both make a case that this is the move to make. Manny is definitely the most franchise-altering player who any team can trade for. But, you know, just because he said yesterday, oh, he might be more likely to sign with a team that trades for him, he should have run that by the agent. Because Dan Lozano told everybody he is not opening a window. Uh-huh. And I think it's clear this is going to be about the biggest pile of money. The Phillies can put the biggest pile of money in front of them next winter.
Yeah.
But they're trying to build something lasting. And so to trade a Sixto Sanchez kind of guy, somebody that they think is a centerpiece of contending for the next 5 years, that is not going to happen for a rental when you can get them in a few months for nothing.
I got you. But, so wait. But, go ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
Sorry. Well, I'm referring to your email, and you said you laughed out loud when you read his quote about how he'd be more likely to sign with a team that trades for him. You think that's just total BS?
I just think it's a guy saying what he thinks the people standing 3 inches from him want to hear. That's not going to happen.
All right. Okay.
It's not. Now, let's so you understand, though, I think they agree with us that they need a bat. And the sense I get is we're much more likely to trade for a bat than an arm, which I think we would never have anticipated starting the season either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Let me ask you about, first of all, quickly on Cole Hamels. Is that going to happen or not?
I'm going to say not. But, you know, they have the inside track if they would want to go down that road. He wants to come here. He can block trades to all but eight teams. The Phillies are not one of those teams. He would come to Philadelphia without having any ability to block. Funny thing is, you know, like he's got a lot of money that he's making this year. The Phillies are paying $2.5 million of it anyhow. And they, as I said, they have no issue taking on contracts that might actually be really attractive to the Rangers to find a team willing to take his money. But the reason it's unlikely is, well, a couple reasons. One is he hasn't really been that good. Like 20 home runs already. And also 10 hit batters, which is bizarre. I think most of his other metrics are in line with where he was a couple years ago, but the home runs are crushing him, and it'd be an area of concern here. The other thing is, as we just said, pitching is not really their big priority. They're in the top five in the league in starting pitching ERA. Opponent OPS, they're in the top three in the league. It's just not quite what they're looking for, but if something should happen in the next couple of weeks that would change that, where they did need a pitcher, as I said, they're well positioned.
Okay.
Make that deal.
All right, last thing. I want to talk to you about Michael Franco and why he's so in disfavor with this team. Because I'm looking at his numbers, and they're not brilliant numbers, but they're not bad numbers either, and they're certainly better than Kingery. Why are they so down on the kid?
I don't know how many times we've discussed this over the last couple of years. When we first started talking about Michael, maybe 3 years ago, I think we agreed he was probably the only guy on the field back then that we thought would still be here when they got good. Now I think, you know, they're tired of trying to convince themselves that the exit velocity is going to translate into him being a better hitter, that he's going to hit more balls in the air. You know, he hits more balls on the ground than anyone in the lineup. He pulls more balls in the ground than anyone in their lineup. He's actually not making a lot of hard contact this year. He's not progressing. And, you know, because they're so gung-ho that bring Manny Machado here next year, he's not going to fit. And so what you could definitely see happen is, you know, they line up a deal to move him to fill some other need and then make a secondary deal for somebody like a Mike Moustakas, Josh Donaldson, if he gets healthy, some temporary fill-in third baseman to get them through the season and upgrade their production, and put the lay in motion the forces that would bring Manny Machado here next year.
Listen, I get that. I get all that. But if the plan is the Kingery's then your everyday third baseman, I don't get it. Because
it can't be that.
Well, but they want to play this kid every day. Where would they play him?
He becomes the bounce around the field guy. Okay. I mean, he might be the third baseman. Mm-hmm. It's not impossible. He can do it.
If he becomes that, because you know I'm under the impression that they like Kingery playing third baseman more than they like Franco, and I just don't get it.
Well, they've you know, look at the numbers. They've had the worst production at third base of any team in the National League, and it's mostly been Mikel they've run out there. And this has gone on now for 3 years.
I get it. His numbers are still better than the guy they fly in front of.
Well, they're going to try to get value for him. He's under control for a while. He's young. There's a lot of good things that can happen. I told you before that, you know, there's some people that view him as like a young Edwin Encarnacion, think the light bulb's going to go on, and he's going to hit 35 homers a year for somebody.
Yeah. Okay.
But I just think they've seen this movie too many times.
Okay. I got you. Jason, always a pleasure.
Great to talk to you, Mike.
We'll talk to you. There he is, Jason Stark.